We're back with Malcolm Gladwell, Bill Russell, and I. You were talking about not only are we connected, but we tend to have certain people who connect us, don't we? This isn't neither the connection nor who they are random.
Yes.
Isn't that what you found?
Yeah.
You've got some nifty characterizations of those people.
Yeah, I became a kind of student of that kind of person who I call a connector. You know, duh. I collect them, and when I find them, I talk to them. One of the ways I find them, I have this little test in the book. I have this list of 350 last names.
Did you really pull that out of the phone book?
I did pull them out from random of the phone book. I inserted my own last name non-randomly into it, but all the other 349 are, in fact, random. And I've given this, you take this list, you go down the list, and you every time you see a surname that you know, you get a point. And then you total 2 points at the end, and that's your connectedness score. It's like a way of estimating the size of your acquaintance circle. And I've given this test now to thousands and thousands of people in every conceivable demographic category, walk of life, old, young, black, white, rich, poor. Results are always the same, or almost always the same. The average score in every group is 35.
The top and the bottom scores are 0 and...
Well, I'll get to that. Point number one, they're all clustered in the middle. Most of us, in other words, have a circle of acquaintances that's roughly the same size. But the truly interesting fact is that in every group, you will find someone who's off the charts, who's at 150 or 100. So in other words, there are in every group of people, one or two people who have 5 or 6 or 7 times as many acquaintances as the rest of us. And then if you pull those people aside, those are my connectors. If you pull them aside, you figure out very quickly why. They have a kind of weird, unbelievable, obsessive social ability.
Doesn't sound like something you can sell.
This isn't necessarily healthy.
It is. I actually think it's all healthy. They're wonder. I love these people. They're not networkers in the way that we use that word pejoratively. Those are the people who are working at it. And these people, it's effortless for them. They're the kind of person who forgets nothing, who sleeps 5 hours a night, whose life is consumed with meeting people and furthering that connection, hanging on to it, you know. And I did a couple of other really cool little tests with them. Like, for example, imagine that you were having a birthday party and you could invite 40 people. Make a list of those 40 people and then divide them up according to the worlds they belong to. Now, if I do that, for example, I find that virtually everyone that I would invite belongs to 3 worlds. They're either people I know through my family, people I know who went to my college, University of Toronto, 1980s, or people who are journalists living in Manhattan, right? I belong to 3 worlds, and that's not unusual. I
think you spent a lot of time in those 3
yes,
worlds.
I did. These connectors, if you do that game with them, they belong to 10 or 11 or 12 different worlds, and that's remarkable because they have that ability. You know, the reason I don't hang out with doctors is that I don't meet doctors. And if I do meet doctors, I don't maintain that link with them. Why? Because they're different from me. It's, I don't know what to talk about, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. These connectors have this weird ability to meet someone who belongs to a completely different social space and feel comfortable in that space and make that person feel comfortable in their space. That is rare, and that's also extraordinarily valuable because that's how the world is linked together. That's the glue that keeps... Otherwise, society would be nothing more than a group of completely unconnected little miniature worlds, right? Who never talk to each other, who are never linked, who are never...
Well, and you talk about power. Those people have
power.
A power that we don't really think about very much.
Yeah. No, it's an extraordinary... and power in the best sense of the world,
But those are not the only people who matter in this business of how people connect. You talk about mavens. You talk about salespeople.
Mm-hmm.
You have a very peculiar look at the world, Malcolm Gladwell. but all of this, it's a sense that you have looked at what we have all seen all day, every day, and you've got on, what were those funky glasses that we wore when we were children to go to the movies, and you could see 3D through these glasses. It's like you're looking at the world with weird glasses on. When you're out in the world now, do you see these categories that you have developed?
I do. It makes you, I always call this the grad students to disease. You know, when you're halfway through your thesis, when you're on page 578, you see the entire world in terms of your thesis. You know, if, so if you're studying, you know, post-war colonialism in sub-Saharan Africa, you begin to see the entire world in terms of sub-Saharan
Africa. That's terrifying. But,
so I do have that disease now. I tend to, you know, divide everything I see up into my own little reductive categories.
But they work, don't they?
Yeah, they do. They're certainly, it gives you, I think it gives you an insight into things you might otherwise overlook. You know, we were talking just now about, you mentioned mavens, which is this category of people who are information specialists, not people specialists. And if you think about it, what it basically says is that when most of us make decisions in something complicated, some complicated area, we don't make the decision for ourselves, and nor do we make the decision because someone more powerful or important or bigger than us says this is what you should do. What we do is we rely on someone in our world who we trust, who has this kind of special expertise. You know, when I buy computers, I call my brother. My brother knows, you know, you cannot walk into a store and buy a laptop on your own. It is impossible unless you're that 1% of the population. You know, they have those little, the way they describe, have you done this? This is a fascinating thing to do. Walk into, you know, one of these big computer megastores, you will see 45 laptops, all of which look, by the way, exactly the same. And they'll have a little card in front of them, which says a series of completely indecipherable numbers.
This is why I haven't done this.
Yes. No, you can't do it.
I could, but it would be a waste of everyone's time.
And they ask you on the basis of that. You can ask the guy who, the salesman, but the salesman doesn't, he didn't know either. I mean, he's just going to say the most expensive. You can't, you know. You're asked to make this decision, which is mind-blowingly complicated. That's not how, you don't buy a computer today the way you used to buy a toaster at Sears 35 years ago when there were two toasters, right? And you bought, there was one big, one little. And if you want the big one, you bought the big one. You know, it was easy.
Yeah,
not
but
easy
the world anymore. Is complicated world now is complicated. In lots of ways, including buying computers.
And the way we deal with that is that there are people in our world, and I call them mavens, in our social world, who have a kind of specialized knowledge. And you call them maven. But that's not just true of computers. It's true of an increasing number of areas.
But you also carry this further into a perspective. And I think what is so rich about what you've done is that it is different from our expectations. You've opened up, you know, allowed us to see the world a different way. But the idea that a good deal of knowledge and memory is essentially distributed, that rather than having to know everything ourselves, which is what you're describing with computers,
yeah.
But not just computers, that's the way we live our lives.
Yeah. This is this theory from a guy at UVA who I find it such a powerful idea, a simple and powerful idea. Basically, he says, think about what memory is. Have you memorized the capital city of, you know, the Ivory Coast? You haven't, probably. But you have memorized where you can find that knowledge. You've memorized that you can find it in an atlas, right? Much of what our memory is not a memory of the specific fact, but a memory of where to find the fact. So I have stored, my memory consists of the library, it consists of, but most of all, it consists of other people. What I've memorized is what kinds of people know certain kinds of knowledge. Married couples, for example, families do this to an extraordinary extent.
And never think about it.
Never even think about it. My mom has a whole long stretch of things which she knows that my father knows, and so as a result, she does not store in her brain. My father does the same thing, you know. And actually, he has this incredibly moving passage where he says, you know, one of the reasons that divorce or a death in the family is so painful is that it's more than you're losing the person. You are losing a part of your own mind because you have stored all kinds of memories, experiences, knowledge in that person's brain, right? When they die, they're taking part of your brain with you. You are literally, when a loved one dies, I feel like a part of myself has gone. It's true. It's not a figure of speech. A part of themself has gone. And I read that and I just said, you know, that is that is a profound insight.
You know what that takes my overstimulated imagination directly to is thinking about how we were before agriculture, when in fact we were much more closely connected because we lived in smaller groups. Mm-hmm. We had a different set of challenges just to survive, and we'd been doing it for a million years. Mm-hmm. And when you talk about this sort of everybody is the memory, this is like the old times.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Don't we still have a need for that?
Oh, we totally have a need for that. And we're still, you know, we like to pretend that these kinds of very primal social structures are not important. They're more important than ever.
More important?
I actually think, yeah. I mean, I think as the world gets more complicated, we're going to be relying on these sorts of structures more and more.
And it's, in some ways, it's even a greater challenge. If I understand what you're saying, it used to be there was a cultural context that you could count on to sort of provide the de facto, a great deal of de facto knowledge and, and at least direction for activity. And a lot of that has gone away. So to the extent that we can't do everything ourselves, and your arguments are persuasive, this the ability to rely on other people to provide not only the extended knowledge, but just the behavioral patterns, you know, a space that you can actually inhabit on a day-to-day basis.
Let's do that when we come back. We're talking with Malcolm Gladwell, who is opening the world to us in lots of new ways. Bill Russell and I are with him at The New Yorker in New York City. We'll all be back in just a moment.